Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. Champs are finished. We're back to CTL footy for the rest of the year. And a short and sweet episode today. Wasn't too much going on this week. But as we said, Coates Talent League footy is back. And we're pushing towards the end of the season. Finals are ever so near. And I'll get us started. We'll start with the boys round. And I caught the Geelong v Oakley game this weekend, which, look, as expected, Geelong kind of got a hold of the Chargers pretty early. Oakley did show a bit of fight. That's felt like, you know, most of their games without their private school boys. They're in it for about the first quarter and a bit, and then it just drops off suddenly. But I'll touch on some of the top contributors, and Cooper Ward is probably up there with his 7 goals in the end. And I said to you, he probably could have kicked, you know, 9 or 10. It felt like he was equally as inefficient as he was efficient. I mean, he finished with 7-4 in the end, or 7-5, and a few shots that he probably should have kicked. And it felt like the ones that were, you know, harder to kick he was getting. But yeah, he was just super clinical in front of goal. He was able to get off his opponent a lot of the time, lowered his eyes inside 50. It was just a pretty complete forward performance from him.
Ever since Will McLaughlin's been drafted in the mid-season draft, he's been really bankable in front of goal in terms of his ability to hit the scoreboard. So that's been really good to see, sort of getting the bags of 2 and 3. But yeah, to up it to 7 goals, 4 is great reward for him. Xavier Rivasich, we know his form's been really good at Vic Country level, and he led the midfield charge, Nathan.
Yeah, he did. It was pretty typical midfield performance from Ivicic. He lowered his eyes moving forward. It's his defensive threat that I loved watching back at Falcons level. His kicking up the ground was quite clean. And yeah, I mean, his stoppage craft was always there, and he was one of the more prominent mids, given that the midfield battle was definitely in favour of the Falcons.
Lockie Jakes finished with the 21 disposals, and Noah Tullio was good as well with 19 disposals and 2 goals.
Yeah, Lockie Jakes picking up where he left off in terms of his championships form. He just slotted right back into that Falcons squad. I mean, he was relied upon very little given the context of that game. It just took his moments well. He was clean and calm, and that's all he needed to be. And love Noah Tullio's pressure. That's what he always brings to the contest. Yeah. It's that speed out of the contest. The only thing I would have wanted to see a little bit more of was a little more poise with his kicks inside 50s and just polishing that up. But I don't think that's been much of a negative of his game all year. This was just more game specific, but you know, quick hands, providing that pressure inside 50, he was leading and kicked a nice goal as well.
Zach McInnes played in the back line, and Darcy Harrington, an under-16s player who missed out on Vic Country, got his debut. Were there any others that impressed from a Falcons point of view, Nathan?
I mean, I like Joe Pike's physical presence all day. He had that battle against Boston Dowling, so two top ages went at it there, and Pike used his body quite well. Probably needed to convert a bit more inside 50 because he had a few opportunities he probably should have made the most of. But he worked hard down both ends most of the day. Eden Ibbotson hard at the footy as per usual. So, you know, pretty stock standing. Like you said, Zach McInnes was good down back, took a few good intercept marks.
And then on the Oakley side of things, Jonty Sinclair, yeah, 4 disposals, 4 goals. That's a pretty clinical performance. And Kane Emery as well played an important game. He's been really sort of carrying that midfield in the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. Jonty Sinclair, yeah, he was just opportunistic, took every moment he could make the use of in inside 50. He had a really good set shot for his second goal, dribbled through his third, kind of kicked him from, you know, all different type of moments, but made the most of him. And Kane Embry, like you said, he's pretty much the workhorse of that Oakley midfield when Jagger's not there as well. Does have to carry quite a lot of weight. His work rate, you know, it was there all day. And even when he's got the ball around the contest, he's very agile. He's got a low center of gravity, which I quite like, where he's able to maneuver himself pretty well. But that was about the wrap from that game, and I'll let you take over the game you watch, where Bendigo unfortunately couldn't get another win over a Metro team, so they're still yet to win in the Metro column. But Calder got the job done, 13-12-90 to Bendigo 7-12-54, and I'll let you touch on Isaac Kakko from the top. It was pretty much a top performer from the Cannons' perspective.
Yeah, he was. He went through the midfield on the day, and yeah, his draft stocks continue to rise. He kicked the 3 goals, including one from outside 50, and won plenty of clearances as well when Calder needed an injection of life, probably in that second quarter, to really break away from Bendigo. He certainly provided it, and it was another typical performance to add to a growing CV.
Damon Hollow, Noah Scott. Well, two that I've quite liked. Noah Scott probably hasn't reached his peak yet this year, but seemed like a good performance. And Damon Hollow, is he built back some good form off the back of some good champs performances?
Yeah, certainly. I'll start with Damon Hollow. That first quarter for Calder, after the first quarter, Calder were clearly the better team, but it was very even in that first quarter, and Damon Hollow was really important inside 50, so he played a forwards role. We know he's played on the inside and outside at Vic Metro. He's gone forward now, and he kicked one goal too in that first quarter and also brought another ball to ground inside 50, which led to another goal. So he was really hard to beat one-on-one, and then his work to get up the ground and then beat his opponent in terms of work rate back on transition got him another couple of goals and generated some scoring shots as well. That speed was on show, so it was a really good performance from him. And then you asked about Noah Scott as well. Yeah, his efficiency was really good, and he was one of the most important players across the course of the day. He's starting to build up some really nice form.
And any other Calder boys that took you? I know Pat Sedd was one of them, but any others that had a pretty significant impact?
Yeah, Pat Sedd's first quarter was really solid, and he carried that form through the rest of the day. And then forward of centre, Kane Rutley was quite nice. He found a fair bit of the footy, 22 disposals and a goal, and played that sort of typical antagonistic small forwards game. Was really hard to lay a hand on and elusive as well. And Hugh Allison hit targets going forward. So they were probably the main boys from a Cannons point of view.
From a Pio's point of view, I mean, they're in a bit of trouble because they're in a bit of bad form at the moment, and you don't want to be heading, you know, into finals or, you know, wild card finals with such form. But James Barrett stood up, down, back. I guess who are the boys that are going to change the tide eventually if it wasn't, you know, on the weekend?
Yeah, well, I think that's been the big issue from a Bendigo point of view. You talk about who's going to change the tide, but it's just the same players performing week after week, and it's becoming a little bit too predictable for Bendigo that if you look at their five or six best players, it's always those country players and they've got no one else. And I know there was a fair bit of frustration from a Bendigo point of view about the way that second half played out. It was in that second half, there were 7-3 Calder's way, but it felt like there was a massive, massive difference in the way the game was played. And as concerned as I've been about Bendigo all year, I've been really high on them. But yeah, it was really hard to watch that second half. James Barrett, like you said, yeah, he was one that can come out with his head held high, and he probably won me over in terms of what he's able to do down back now. We've seen him physically being able to match it down there and play a really important role. He's taken some marks in a couple of talent league games as well. This is probably the best of the lot, though. 8 intercept marks, read the play really well, and a fair few of those were contested marks. He was not outmarked in a one-on-one all day, so a terrific performance from him. And yeah, Bendigo's backline was at times under siege, but he was one who held up terrifically.
I guess when we go down that list of the top talent, that's, you know, repeating their efforts. Archerday Wicks and Jobe Shanahan, you know, are the next down. How did they perform?
Yeah, so Jobe Shanahan played in the back line on the day, and I think we're going to see a little bit of that from him in the back end of the season. The first quarter, he had a couple of moments where he looked perhaps a little bit lost, which is a bit concerning, but after that, he really built into the game nicely, took some big contested marks, flew at the footy, even got forward and kicked a goal from 50, which was good to see. So, yeah, a nice performance from Jobe Shanahan, what we're accustomed to seeing, and continued his strong form. Archerday Wicks in the forward line felt like he was playing a lone hand up there with no Taj Bond, no James Barrett, no Jobe Shanahan, and he looked really dangerous. He finished with the 1-3. It felt like he was a lot better than that. He took some massive marks, some one-handed marks, and every time the ball was in his vicinity, he looked really dangerous. Unfortunately, just wasn't quite able to execute, and the delivery wasn't great either, but if he was surrounded by better players, it felt like he could have had 5 or 6 on the day. He was quite good.
Any others from a Bendigo perspective that, you know, I guess we're that next level under, but still have the potential to make a big difference in the back end?
Yeah, I thought Zayden Lockwood had some moments. Nick Jeffson, 20 disposals and 2 goals, wasn't too bad either. And to touch on 4 double bottom majors who got their debut, Cody Walker finished with the 18 disposals, and he was quite good. He showed some glimpses of his elusiveness in traffic, and he's only going to be better for that run. Seamus Doherty, a key position player, took some big grabs as well. Sonny Beasy was an important member of the back line, and Phoenix Hemming was hard at it. He didn't have a lot of the footy, but he did finish with the 6 tackles, which really shone through as well. He's played some senior footy in the Sunraysia League, but that's about a wrap on that game. Bendigo will want to bounce back into some form pretty quickly. We'll go to the Murray versus Northern game now, 7-10-52 apiece. Gab Stumpf, probably the big talking point to come out of this game. He kicked the 3-2 in his best performance of the year, arguably took some big marks. couple of those goals came in the last quarter. Unfortunately, he had a chance to win the game for Northern late, wasn't able to do so, but still a good performance from him nonetheless. Jordan Gillard also quite strong, and Zach Johnson finished with the 27 disposals.
And then, Tassie?
I guess to touch on some Murray boys as well.
My bad.
To touch on some Murray boys, though, like Matt Whitlock, 2 goals, 5. That's a pretty good performance in terms of his presence that he provides. And he only did take the one mark, so a lot of that from general play as well. And then Christian Mardini had a good battle with Jack Whitlock too. Ashton McPherson playing a strong game, and Joe Berry typically hitting the scoreboard.
Sorry, my bad. I was looking too far ahead and I didn't realise you hadn't even gone to Murray yet. But I will move to Tassie in Western now. And Tassie got the job done, 72-58. Probably a day of almost moments for Western. I mean, they finished with 7-16. In the end, had more scoring shots than Western, but Dom Pitt with 3 goals, 23 touches. Lenny Douglas, 2 goals. That's always good, especially given we've talked up that he needs to come back to CTL and do something pretty productive, and it looks like he's back to his usual form. Tom McGuan, 34 touches and 2 goals. That's a pretty impressive performance for a bottom major. Excited to see how he ends his year. He'll be a big part of Western's run if they're to go deep into September. And Xavier Cardacci, 1 goal, 4, but, 24 touches. So, there's an almost day for you. But the Tassie Devils got the job done then. And they're on a good win streak.
Like, yeah, they are.
Hopefully, they haven't peaked too early. But, yeah, not too much to dislike so far. Let you choose your next game.
Yeah, Sandy getting the job done against the Dandenong Stingrays, 11-7-73 to 9-11-65. They were able to break away midway through the third quarter, were challenged very late, but ultimately were able to win away in the end. From a Sandy perspective, Luke Kennedy with 30 disposals. I know he's one you've really liked with his poise. And Ricky Theodoropoulos kicked the 3 goals with his 26 touches. Probably his best performance at the level, showed his smarts as well. And yeah, he's played the 6 games now and has 11 goals. So he's really reliable hitting the scoreboard. From a Dandenong perspective, Harvey Langford transferring that form in the national championships back to Coates League, 32 disposals and 1 goal, 3 to go with 3 tackles. Jordan Doherty, 28 disposals and 20 hitouts in an outstanding performance. And Kane Hurst was quite reliable down back as well.
Gippy and Easton, I was devastated because this was going to be my second game of the day, and I turn it on, right, and first 30 seconds, centre clearance, Christian Reyes burst out of the centre stoppage, and it was quite funny when I was like, Reyes' first goal, because like, I know exactly what type of goal he's kicked without you even to explain it. Kicks it on the run from 50, next centre stoppage. Alex Taru was in that centre stoppage, gets it out, ball goes forward, Job Scape and kicks a goal 30 seconds later. 6-all, I'm like, this is going to be a cracker. Stream cuts. So it cut out for the next 30 minutes, and I had to toss up. I did end up changing games. I didn't want to miss out on the opportunity to see another game. So I'm very disappointed because it was very close, and it was Gippy that got up 11-13-79 to 11-3-69. So maybe the scoreboard does look a bit better in Easton's way, given 10 more scoring shots to Gippy. Yep. But Seth McDonald, 4 goals. He's lifted in this middle part of the year, but it wasn't like it's been unexpected. You talked him up quite a lot in the preseason, and if it wasn't for that concussion, he's got that opportunity to play that, those first 3 games and possibly get a better shot at Metro. But still, he's been backing up some really big performances. Will Malady for Gippy comes in as a double bottom major, 2 goals there on debut. I mean, 2-2 from 9 touches, so nearly 50%. Touches were score involvements.
And a really muddy day, so to take the 5 marks, really impressive as well. And Asher Easton played in defence, so he was the main target forward of the footy, which is a massive, massive responsibility to bear for a double bottom major.
Xavier Lindsay with 31 touches, standard deliver. You know what you're getting with him every week now. Josh Smiley and Christian Moraes, pretty similar stat sheets in the end, a goal and 26 and 25 touches respectively in the end. But yeah, Gippy again, they're in some pretty decent form. They're always one that are pretty, they're pretty dangerous in kind of any period of the year, it feels like, and especially in the back end of the year, they always tend to cause an upset or two.
Yeah, they do build into some nice form. Eastern probably want to get some winning form behind them, because they are one that can do some damage in September, but have sort of fallen away through the middle of the year. Andrew Barker and Riley White, a couple more that I know, played some pretty good games as well in defence. But that's a wrap on the boys' games this week. I'll let you read through the ladder.
So Sandy sit on top on 36. They're a game ahead, but I think a few teams are a game behind them. Geelong on 32 as well as Tassie and Calder. Gippy on 28, Dandenong on 26. Murray's second draw gets them on 22. So I thought they had two draws. They drew to Dandenong, didn't they?
No, they didn't.
No, sorry.
They didn't.
Someone drew to Dandenong
because they've got Academy, I reckon.
Okay. Yeah, my bad. And then Western and Eastern on 20. Northern on 18 with that draw now, so they're half a game ahead. Bendigo on 16, Rebels on 12, and Oakley on 12. Now, looking ahead, when we go to conferences, Metro is 1v6, 2v5, 3v4. So at this point in time, and it's looking very likely, Northern have to just win one more game or Oakley have to lose one more game. It would be Sandy v Oakley in the first week, and it would actually be 2 weeks in a row because they play in the last week.
Mm.
Who wins that? Because if Oakley lose, they're ineligible for lucky loser, given their the bottom seed. But
and it'd be a real shame because we know how many draft prospects they've got, but they've just been so weak through this middle part of the year, and even more so than what they usually are. I'd back Sandy in both of the games. Yeah,
it'd be interesting because if Oakley knocked them off the week before, that becomes a really interesting wild card game. And then in the Country Conference, Geelong lead on top, so Country first will go straight through to the quarters, and it's 2v7, 3v6, 4v5. So the ladder is really, and especially that top end is very even right now. There's only a game and a half between second and fifth, so anything could really happen at the moment. But we'll move to the girls now. I'll touch on the game I saw, which was Geelong and Oakley's girls, which is a little underwhelming because the last time these two teams played, Geelong, you know, held a pretty good account of themselves. Oakley got out of the gates early in that first game, and then Geelong kept him, I think it was 13-8 in that after quarter time. So it was pretty even, but Oakley were just too strong from the start. It was just kept in their forward half, and Geelong weren't able to get some good forward momentum going. But Sarah Pousty, probably at the top of that list with her performance, she delivers the exact same thing every time, but it's so impactful. That contest work, she's so tough. She is so strong, and you know, she was slick out of the stoppage as well. She was intercepting further up the ground, took a few nice intercept marks as well. Loved her work rate. Thought Emma McDonald could have been a bit more clinical with her finishing inside 50 because she was marking absolutely everything that came her way, but only finished with the one goal. And yeah, there were some other performers that stood up as well. You talked Maggie Marnie, Jacinta Baxter, Abby Vicino all had their moments. But it's a hard game to analyse when just absolutely everything's going their way. You know, you can't really analyse, well, what did they do when it wasn't? So that type of game for the Oakley girls.
And then from a Geelong perspective, Sarah Howley with the 24 disposals, but good to see Stella Huxtable, who's performed quite strongly at Vic Country level, the bottom major, finished with 21 touches and a strong game from what you've told me.
Yeah, 100%. She's definitely brought in that country form straight into the Falcons. They brought up productivity to back up off the half-back line at times and work it forward. When it was possible, just things weren't going their way at times. It was hard to get a lot of clean possessions. Sarah Howley, her work rate contest to contest was there, but she did really struggle to impose herself on the game when the disposal was quite poor on the Falcons' end. It just didn't feel like she could get any run going or any transitional presence, you know, going her way, but still was a productive performance. You can't really fault it.
Was there anyone else from a Geelong perspective worth bringing up?
Hayley Peck, I did appreciate her efforts in the ruck. She battled pretty hard the whole day. Lucy Marishook had her, you know, her pressure in the forward half was definitely there, although the touches probably don't reflect, as well as Rebecca Clotty, where, you know, they were always prominent with their pressure, but just couldn't get their hands on the footy at the end of the day. But I'll pass to you for the next game. Probably should touch before you continue. Yep. Tassie and Western was called off in the girls, which doesn't make any sense because the boys played after them, but the girls couldn't catch their flight. So that's as confusing as...
Yeah, a real shame for them.
I don't understand how that happens, but I'll pass to you now.
Yeah, Eastern got the job done over quarter, 10-9, 69-0, 1-1. From an Eastern perspective, Isla Baldwin, the overager, came in and played some really strong footy, 30 disposals she finished with and 7 tackles. We've seen her play some VFLW footy this year. And Evie Parker has become a real bankable contributor. She's able to play on the wing, but she's got the size to go forward as well, 24-2. She had Taylor McMillan and Grace Ballany also with strong games from a quarter perspective. Grace as a party was there. Main contributor, and Jade McClay, the bottom major, is going to be a real handful next year.
I'll move now to Gippy and Bendigo. And Gippy got the job done 6-5-41 to 2-5-17, and that almost guarantees Gippy a final spot with that win, unless it really goes wrong. But they're pretty much set at this point. But Alice Stoddard, 2 goals from 14 touches. She's had a very impressive middle to, you know, this point of time in the year. She's been really impressive. From a Bendigo perspective, sorry. Alexi Gregor with 19 touches. It was, I mean, two goals for Bendigo, so wasn't a lot of involvement on the scoreboard there. But back to Gippy, I mean, Ash Sencha with 30 touches, not a lot to, that's just, you know what you're going to get from her. Jazz Soudan, we should talk about, not about this game in particular, but we did release last week a mini series, what you want to call it, a mini film, almost on her family. And it's a big family. They've got 12 siblings that live out in Buchan, which is 456 kilometres east of Melbourne from memory. But yeah, we released that last week. We really appreciate it if you go check that out. It's a really fascinating story. You know, Jazz is obviously looking to get picked up this year. She's in good contention, and she's got, you know, four other sisters at the moment that they all train with very regularly up where they live. And it's a pretty cool story. You don't hear about that too often.
No.
And the training regimes they've got up there to give them the best chance. So it's pretty cool, especially, you know, the country girls do have to work a lot harder than the metro girls. That's just the truth, given the resources applied to them. But just wanted to give that shout out and promo to that video. That's on our YouTube. If you go and find the five football sisters, that's there. But I'll let you move on to the next game.
Yeah, Dandenong got the job done against the Sandy Dragons, 14-7, 91 to Sandy, 1-2-8. An expected result, this one, but the storyline to come out of the day was Ali Simon's return from injury. She finished with 22 disposals, two goals, and went through the ruck as well, 9 hitouts. The big juggling act for the Dandenong coaching staff will be whether to play her in the ruck or to play her up forward. We know how powerful she's been in the ruck as a bottom major. She showed so much, and recruiters absolutely loved her. She probably isn't the size to be a ruck at the next level, though, and she has shown some good forward craft, and that was on display on the day as well. She took just the one mark, but she had aerial presence. So yeah, a really good return from her, and no doubt there'll be plenty of eyes on her in the last Vic Country game and the back end of Dandenong's year. Gemma Reynolds, Talia Sanger, and tackling machine Nikita Harris, all strong for the Stingrays. From a Sandringham perspective, Tiger Daltrey's played a couple of nice games now in losing efforts, so good to see her really grit her teeth. 27 disposals, and Judy Goldman had the 13 and was a real inside presence for them.
I saw the goal that Simmons kicked. When I tell you this ball was going out of bounds and was brought back by the wind, it was quite unbelievable, this kick on goal she had. That was how bad the conditions were at Seaford. I couldn't imagine them have been any good, to be honest, at that ground. It's so open, and anything can be affected by anything. Yep. But I'll move now to Murray and Northern. And again, Murray, they feel like they're so close, but they're still unable to get that first win. But they went down 5-10, 40 to the Northern Knights, and Murray were 2-5, 17. Olivia Jesser, bottom major for Northern, she kicked 3 goals in the game. Zoe Hargreaves with 22 touches. But weirdly, it's Murray that dominate the stat sheet when you look at disposals. They have a lot of the footy. Holly Egan, 33 touches, 9 tackles. Rain Dodd, 10 tackles and 22 disposals. So they're no strangers to finding the footy. It's just a matter of finding that extra bit of class in their bottom end to really elevate them and get themselves the win. But I think that is all the games covered as far as I'm concerned. I'll quickly run through the ladder. Oakley are 2 games clear on 40. So, they have to lose every game to pretty much not finish in first. Eastern on 32. Dandy, Northern, Tassie all on 28. So that's an interesting little section. But right under them is Gippy and Geelong with 24. So anything can happen in that kind of top bit. Again, 2 games separate second and seventh. Rebels on 16. Bendigo, Sandy on 12. Western on 8. Calder on 4. Murray still yet to win. And we're going to do our tips, and then we're going to talk about quickly the Allies loss to SA, and then we'll finish with the question of the day, which you might have noticed we didn't have at the start. But I'll continue on with the girls. First game, Northern and Bendigo at Preston.
Northern.
Yeah, Bendigo do need to respond, but it's hard on the road, especially. I'll go Northern. Geelong and Tassie at La Trobe. This is quite a big game. Given their position, their second and third respectively. Yep. This is kind of a quarterfinal preview.
Geelong.
I'm interested to see what Tassie, given they had the week off, not, you know, that by misfortune, but I'll go Tassie there. Dandenong and Eastern, another really big game. This is at Frankston. This is an annual occurrence.
This is huge. Yeah. I'm going to go Eastern, but only marginally.
Dandenong, I mean, they're first at the moment in the country, so they do need to win this one. I'll back Dandy. I think they've got a point to prove, and that they can match it with Dandy, Eastern and Oakley. Obviously, they went down to Oakley quite heavily at the start of the year, but they're still competitive. And Western Gippy's the next one at Williamstown. Gippy as well. GWV and Calder.
GWV.
Rebels as well. Sandy Murray. Now, this one, yeah, if you I'll look at Murray. Sandy's form, I'll I think Murray. It got, I mean, yeah, geez. This is, I think Murray played Bendigo as well, which is a 50-50. But if you're going off form, this is, you've got to go Murray yep. here. And this is their best opportunity. So, because it sounds like we're bashing Sandy. We just want them to win one game, Murray. But good luck to them. And then in the boys, pretty sure it's similar fixtures from memory.
Dandenong Eastern.
Yep. Dandenong Eastern aren't in good form.
I still back Eastern. I think they've got a bit of talent. Murray and Sandy.
Murray.
Sandy. Northern and Bendigo.
Yeah, well, Northern. Bendigo, yeah. They don't beat Metro teams.
Yeah, I've got to go Northern now after what I saw on the weekend. Geelong and Tassie.
This one will be a good game as well. It'll probably tell us a bit where Geelong are at in the context of the year. I'll go with the Falcons.
Yeah, so will I. Western and Gippy.
This will be a good game to watch, actually. I mean, given it's in Williamstown as well, suits the Jets' conditions. I'll go with the Gippy, but just.
I'll go Western by a goal and GWV and Calder.
Well, this will be a good game, actually. This could be a bit closer than expected. Calder in good form. Can't look past him.
Yeah, likewise. Now, we'll touch on the South Australia versus the Allies in the Girls National Championships quickly. South Australia comfortably getting the job done. 15-10-100 to the Allies, 3-4-22. They were led by Claudia O'Neill and Georgia McKee, who were both really strong and hard to stop. India Rashid really good as well, as was Violet Patterson. So some really good prospects out of SA that we've heard a bit about. Good to see them get some form behind them. From a Allies perspective, the speedy Emma Janisia finished with the 19 disposals. Maddie Quinn, again, had a really good account of herself in the ruck, and Preya Bowering played quite well. Sophie Strong, we hear, has succumbed to injury again, which we don't like to hear because she was one who really liked her bottom age season, was hoping to see a bit more continuity from her this year. So hopefully she can get back on the park soon. And Ash Patton, who has played up both ends throughout the carnival, finished with the 12 disposals.
We'll move now to the question, which we usually do at the start, but I thought this would just be a good little quick end to the podcast, a good 3-minute discussion about who was the most impressive state league performer over the weekend. And this question's very limited, if you know, but I think it's just a good discussion to have. Who's gone and played state league footy? Because there's a long list of names that have from last year have gone and made a name for themselves at state league and boys, you know, this year that are looking to get that senior experience. But I'll touch on Jagger Smith to start. So I watched his game against Williamstown on the weekend, and that was one of the worst conditions you could ever possibly get.
Typical Williamstown.
So, he 31 touches, that's a testament to his work rate. I didn't feel when I watched it he had that many, but that was just because the nature of the contest, there were a lot of possessions where he'd get it instantly wrapped up, like just couldn't do anything there. It was an inefficient game for his standards because of the weather, because he was just hacking it forward by foot, but it wasn't like
that's what you need in those
that's
conditions.
What you need.
You need territory.
You don't take that into account as it was a poor game. His work rate was there. He was clinical as well. Like, he made use of his body size again. He was able to split through opponents. That nice agile frame where he could just maneuver his way around, I thought was elite. And yeah, it was just terrific to watch him advance at that level. The physicality didn't bother
him. Yeah, I was going to ask. So you look at someone like a George Stevens and Cody Anderson have probably been the two best players to have gone and played VFL while still Coates League listed in the last couple of years. George Stevens last year, 26 disposals for Geelong, VFL and Debut. Cody Anderson, 16-2 for Box Hill earlier this year. Yep. Jagger Smith doesn't have that frame, but you say he still dealt with the physicality well.
Well, he was in most of the centre bounces. I'm pretty sure from memory he was only out of three or four in the whole game. There weren't many to be on. I think it was only like 17 for the whole game. That was 58-36 the final score, but he was relied upon quite a lot. Didn't spend a lot of periods on the bench as well for senior level, and you know, it was I think they were pretty long quarters, 26 27 28, those types. So
yep,
his conditioning's terrific and applied himself so well around the contest, and it was great to see him. I'd love to see him on a dry day. He's actually every potential, especially given Richmond's VFL side is weaker compared to the rest of the VFL competition. He's definitely got the potential to go out and have 35, which is just mind-boggling,
yeah.
Seriously.
Well, we know how many injuries they've had. So, yeah, opportunities are certainly present there for the Richmond boys. I'll touch on some CTL players who have had the opportunity to play VFL this year. Noah Uze got the opportunity to play for Casey, the Melbourne father-son prospect. Isaac Barry, the son of Sydney's Leo Barry, has played for the Northern Bullants. Jagger Smith, as you touched on. Brody Finlay for Sandy Zebs. Ned McGuinness, Dayton Urata. Liam Kershaw for Geelong Falcons. Cody Anderson, Ryanair. Lockie McCarthy. Arthur made his debut last week for Footscray. Joe Pike looked at the level for Geelong VFL. Ry Cantwell has played for Richmond. Remy McLean for Box Hill. And Ollie Barter made his VFL debut for Carlton's VFL side on the weekend. Luke Quainer and Zayden Cochran have both played for the Pies. Worth touching on from a VFL perspective as well, that the Sandy Zebras have committed to taking a... St Kilda have committed to taking a rookie the Sandy Zebras. And they don't have any massive standouts that are Zebras listed. So there has been a bit of talk that they might take a Dragons player who has played Zebras throughout the year. So someone like a Brody Finlay or one of those who does get promoted, whether it be a Ned McGuinness or someone like that. So that's something to keep an eye on, who does get the opportunity from the Dragons in the next couple of weeks to play for the Zebras, because they might find their way onto a rookie list for the Saints. I'll let you touch on Sid Draper, who you watched play in the Sandful as well.
Yeah, he's nuts. You watch a player who genuinely fits in at that level. Jagger, you can tell it was his first experience, was kind of getting a grasp of it. To be fair, that was Draper's third game at senior level for South Adelaide against Port Adelaide on the weekend. And he was phenomenal. His work rate contest to contest is amazing. And I spoke about Noah Tullio and his low center of gravity. Sid Draper runs like his knees are on the ground already. Mm. And that's how good his ground ball work is, where he picks it up and it feels so seamless. Kicked a really good goal from on the run from 30. But it was two moments he had in the third quarter that changed the game, literally changed the game, where Port Adelaide were on, you know, they were storming back. They got it to 15 points. Two goals in 30. He didn't kick the two goals, but he sets up two goals in 30 in 60-second period. Margins back out to 27. It's game over, really. It was windy, wettish conditions. Yeah, he was phenomenal, and it's glad that he's been able to show that, given his champs were not underwhelming, but I don't think he was able to perform to his absolute best. But I'll let you go through to finish some of the boys from last year that have come into VFL systems and, you know, been able to produce some good footy.
Yeah, absolutely. So Billy Hicks for Box Hill has become a real regular there. Jake Smith, whose dad is an icon down at Werribee, has played some games down at the Bees. Jovan Petrick at Williamstown has been really good. Jet Hartman's played at both ends for Collingwood. Ethan Williams for GWS, a real staple in their backline. Rook Barry and Will Elliott, both at the Northern Bullants. Harry Scott's played some games at Richmond VFL, as has Liam George, a clever small forward. Josh Docking and Will Brown at the Zebras. Oscar Smart, obviously the mid-season draft prospect who was overlooked, has played some strong footy at Essendon VFL, as has Cam Nyko. Christian Ferronato as well at Carlton's VFL, and Braden LaPlanche at Casey as well have been some of the main ones, and Josh Tovey, the former Eastern Rangers co-skip, has played some footy at Box Hill as well. And just, we won't touch on it in this episode, but we've got a separate video we're releasing about a recap of the thriller in the APS, effectively the APS grand final between Brighton and Halebury. Just one goal scored in the first half to Brighton, and then it became a little bit of a shootout in the last quarter or so. It was really wet conditions, but there were some really strong contributors. Mitch Kirkwood Scott for Halebury was really good. Charlie Rowe played a good role, and Levi Ashcroft for Brighton. Sam Linder really led the way with a four-quarter performance. Archie Ludewick took some big contested marks, and there are a lot of Vic Metro names in action and lots of interesting matchups that we'll assess, but that's in a separate video. A one-point win in a thriller to Brighton, so congratulations to them, and check out that video if you want to hear a bit of a more in-depth analysis on that game. But that's all we've got in this episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast, so thanks for tuning in. Check us out on social media, and we'll see you next week.